Welcome back in, hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Go ahead.
Can I do one quick text line from
sure.
Driven by Wilson? Because I want you to tell me if I'm being
do whatever
a
you
jerk.
Want.
I don't want to be a jerk. So I'm trying not to be a jerk. So you tell me. You guys tell me if I'm being a jerk here.
Okay.
All right, here's another texter. Quote, to me, if you're vaccinated and your vaccine works so well, why are you so worried if unvaccinated people don't want to be? Shouldn't your vaccine protect you? Here's my response. Because I want things to stay open. Because I don't want unvaccinated people to die. I don't want hospitals to fill up again. I didn't want to get my kids vaccinated, but we did because these virus mutations are scary and we want them protected. And enough adults didn't get vaccinated to get us to herd immunity. Does all that make sense? Was that a jerky response?
I don't think so.
Okay. Michelle?
Cool? I don't think it was. Okay. I think it was straight to the point.
All right. So we're going to have a nice conversation about vaccines all day on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHunting.com. Let's go.
615.
I'm here for it.
615-737-1025. Also, as a texter also points out, I can't believe we've gotten through 2 hours of the show and we've not commented on Julio Jones and his Waffle House cleats yesterday.
Yes.
That's nice Waffle House cleats at day one of training camp yesterday. Julio Jones, just like Waffle House. Always open, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you for saying that. I think a lot of people didn't get that.
Yeah.
It was just like, wow, I love those waffles too.
That's what he's saying. He's always open. That's what that is.
He's not saying he eats tons of sausage patties.
Although, couldn't blame him. Great stuff you can find over there.
Oh, yeah. No, now, okay, so you're cool with that place too.
Yeah.
Well, you're the Cracker Barrel guy.
It doesn't have to be a battle. It could be a partnership.
So two things can be true.
Yeah.
They can coexist.
They can coexist.
We can apply this to the vaccine or any other walk of life, really.
They can coexist.
Let's all live together and be happy.
That's right.
I love them both, too, for the record.
Oh,
I think I actually would drift a little the WH way.
That's fine.
But
everybody has
but
their own thoughts.
Your place is,
you could be wrong.
Your
but
place
that's cool.
is solid. Your place is solid.
Appreciate that. So the Nashville Predators making some moves yesterday in the opening day of free agency in the NHL. And it was interesting. Joe, we were talking about it yesterday on the show. And as we were on the air, Pierre LeBrun from TSN and The Athletic tweeting out that Granlund was heading to free agency and that he was going to hit the open market. Adam Vingan, our buddy from The Athletic, spoke to Granlund's agent yesterday, Todd Diamond. And you know, his agent told Vingan that talks got nowhere and that there were no traction between Granlund and the Nashville Predators. So, I mean, I assumed at that point he was gone and Mikhail Granlund was going to find a new home and he was going to hit the open market. And then I get home from the show yesterday and Granlund is signed with the Nashville Predators. Less than 2 hours later, Granlund is a member of the Predators. And not only is he signed a 4-year deal worth $20 million. So not even kind of a 1-year, all right, well, let's do this again and see what happens kind of thing. 4 years, long-term commitment to Mikhail Granlund for the Nashville Predators. That was a pretty crazy turn of events yesterday, going from, yeah, Mikhail Granlund's gone, how do you move on without him, to, oh, all of a sudden he's back here for the next 4 years. I don't know that I've ever seen anything quite like that one yesterday.
Yeah, it's like we broke up. Okay, we're married.
Yeah.
Well, Vingan wrote in the piece I didn't even realize was up until you said it earlier this morning that this is like a Ross and Rachel kind of thing. Little Friends reference. By the way, Friends nowhere near the top five of funny shows, in case anyone wonders. But good reference, Vingan. It was very weird. I was at Titans camp talking to Kayla Anderson, Ashley Farrell, and I just looked at Twitter, and I'm like, my reaction was like, what the? I may have said a bad word, actually. I thought this was not going to happen, and now it just happened. But as far as the actual deal, I think you like it less than I do. I've said from the day they decided not to train with the trading deadline, he better be back then because he's very important. I think he has been more important and has played better than the numbers. Not that the numbers don't matter, not that the numbers don't need to go up with this kind of a deal. But I feel better about the Preds' playoff chances. I do hear you on sort of the mixed message a little bit that goes with this.
Well, that's part of why I'm not a huge fan of this contract. And it really doesn't have a lot to do with Mikhail Granlund. I think he's a good player. I don't think that he is necessarily worth $5 million a year, to be honest with you. But I think he's a good player. Obviously, he's important to this team. He's important to John Hines. He led the forwards in ice time last year. We get all that. And I'm not saying that he's not going to be a good player for the Predators moving forward. I don't like 4 years on this deal. I said yesterday on the show, I would cap it at probably two. I could live with three, I guess, for Mikael Granlund. I hate the fourth year of this deal. I really do. And he'll be 33 at the end of it. That doesn't mean that he's not going to be productive and that he still can't be a good player at the end of this contract. But I think sometimes, number one, I think we've overinflated Granlund a little bit. He's got 27 points in 51 games. As well as he's played, as important as he's been, it's not like he's lighting the world up offensively. And now, I mean, I would assume he's going to come back and be the second-line center. That's my guess. He ended the season that way. They played well with him as second-line center. So you've got Johansson down the middle. You've got Granlund down the middle now as well. You've just traded for Cody Glass. There's not a whole lot of upward mobility for Glass at this point. And look, I'm not saying that Cody Glass absolutely deserves to start a second-line center, but I would imagine at some point in the next 4 years, you probably want to take a look at him at second-line center. You can move Granlund back to wing, and I understand that. I think the Predators have got to get out of the business at signing long-term contracts. I think they're in a spot right now with their team, with their franchise. You got to figure out what you have with these young guys. And, you know, I had somebody reach out and say, well, what if that fourth year was the difference in losing Granlund and letting him walk to free agency or bringing him back? Let him walk. Like, I don't have a problem letting Granlund walk if it means signing him to a four-year deal. Now, look, it's not an eight-year deal. I realize that. And we've talked so much about Johansson and Duchesne. It's not that, and I totally get it.
It's good compared to that.
I don't think there's any question about that. I think that's too many years for Mikael Granlund, and there's a lot of charts pointing out that his play on the ice is going the wrong way from an analytics standpoint. Again, I like analytics. I don't think analytics are everything. I don't buy into that as much as a lot of people do, but it is there, and it's something that's been a pretty consistent downturn over the course of the last couple of years. So I think this has a chance by year three or year four to be a pretty bad deal for the Predators, and I would not have signed that deal 4 years. I just wouldn't have done it. I'd have let him walk before I'd have done that.
So it does mean $92 million committed right now to Duchesne, Johansson, and Granlund.
Yes.
That's a number. 92? You're part of the 92 million.
that is correct.
But okay, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, to what you brought up as well, it's difficult for me to figure out exactly what the Predators are doing right now. You've traded Victor Arvidsson, you've traded you traded Ryan Ellis. You know, Pekka-Rinne's retired. Yarncroke's gone in the expansion draft. You've gotten younger, and David Poile's been vocal about getting younger. And I realize, like, you can't just have an entire roster full of 23-year-olds. I think part of getting younger is allowing some of these guys to come up and play in bigger roles. And I look at this, you've got Forsberg, Johansson, Duchesne, and now Granlund. That's four guys that take up spots in the top six, you would think. Where's Tolvanen going to play? Where's Glass going to play? Where's Tomasino going to play? You know, they don't all have to be in the top six, but those three young guys that I just mentioned, you project as top six guys. They need to play with good players, with other high-skilled players in order for you to see what they have. And I don't know. It's difficult to really identify what the plan is. And that goes back to the quote-unquote competitive rebuild that we're talking about. What is that? Like, what does that mean? What is competitive? Is it making the playoffs and being a fringe playoff team? Okay, but what is that accomplishing? I just think it's difficult for me right now to identify exactly what the plan is for the Predators.
Well, I agree with you that the term is a bit too much, and 3 years would have been ideal. I mean, realistically ideal to me, like 3 years, right? So at some point that could be a problem. I mean, I guess to me it just pales in comparison to those other two deals, so it doesn't bother me that much. But, I mean, to answer your question, I think this makes them more competitive. So this is the competitive part of competitive rebuild. The rebuild part is trading away Arvidsson and Ellis, and you got Glass coming in, and you know young guys are going to get more of a chance to be more competitive. I do think the Preds have a better chance of making the playoffs next year with Mikael Granlund, for whatever that's worth. I think it's worth a lot to them on a business perspective. But whatever that's worth in terms of your hopes of coming back and actually being a contender, I mean, they could take a bigger step back next year with a younger team and still be quickly back if they made correct choices. If next offseason Poile makes a big move that, I don't know, brings in somebody who makes you better offensively. But I do think you dunked on someone earlier, Robbie, on the Ryan Ellis discussion, because it does, it gets out of hand with this. Ellis sucked. I mean, no. Ellis was a very, very good player. He had some bad moments in the playoffs, and the deal was way too long. There was another just ridiculously long contract that they got out of. But that's what Granlund reminds me of a little bit too, because the numbers need to get better. But last year, so many times I watched it and was like, he might be their best player. Like, he is so important. He is so good.
He was great last year. I don't want to take away from anything he did last year. He was great. And to your point, I think he's important moving forward. You've got to get out of the business of getting people in contracts when they're 34 or 35 years old. I mean, he'll be 33 at the end of this. He's a smaller guy. The production's already started to go down a little bit. Points are not the only thing, and I get that. But they do matter. Like, you've got to find a way to be productive. And it is concerning that those points have gone down already in his career. What's that going to look like 3-4 years from now?
I think it's also a thing with Granlund that when he came over for Fiala, and of course remember that, like, Poile, you just fleeced your guy. And it was really bad. I mean, it was bad under Laviolette.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was like, wow, what a terrible deal. And
it was not the same because the contract term wasn't the same, but it was like Kyle Turris level bad at one point.
Yeah. So then, I mean, it has been so much better. And again, to me, last year, like, just on the eyeball test, like, I would not have guessed his numbers were his numbers. But he just does so many good things out there. He's such a crafty, smart player. I think he plays bigger than his size a lot, and I think he's just a really effective guy. And so I think it's also relative to before. It's so much better that maybe that improves the view of what he is. I mean, our guy Dom Lucizen. By the way, it was funny listening to Jared try to say his name yesterday. He's down on this, you know, and the decline. Is he declining? Did he have a huge dip? And then now he's on the way back up. I do agree that, like, the production's got to get better. You want, for $5 million a year, I mean, you'd like him to be a 50-point player next year, 55-point player next year, right? And for the years to come?
Yeah, I would say
that's
so.
That's fair. And I think that's possible.
And I'm not saying he can't get there. Can he get there for the next 4 years? I don't know. There's a lot of people that say, well, who cares? It's a tradable contract. Yeah, it's a tradable contract right now.
It's more tradable than some.
It's more tradable than some. But if Granlund hits the wall 3 years from now, who's going to want to trade for him at $5 million a year? Probably not very many people. So I think this idea that it's a tradable contract, you have no clue whether or not it's going to be a tradable contract. It could be. I mean, it could be tradable. It could be one you want to hang on to if you're David Boyle and the Predators. I don't know. My initial reaction to it yesterday was, whew, that's too many years, and I would not have done that if I was David Boyle and the Nashville Predators. We'll continue this conversation coming up next. Bob and Antioch, hang with us. We'll get to you on the other side of the break. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Talking Nashville Predators, Mikhail Granlund back into the fold. A 4-year, $20 million deal agreed to with the Nashville Predators yesterday. Preds also signed a backup goaltender, David Rittich, as well. 1 year, $1.25 million. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Let's go to our phone line and welcome in Bob from Antioch, who wants to weigh in. Bob, thanks for hanging with us. Thanks for calling in to Robbie and Rex Road.
Good morning, guys. How deep into the season do you think the coaching staff will go if Duchesne doesn't play well before they sit him, reduce his ice time, et cetera, and, you know, maybe give Glass a chance to prove himself? You know, how much of an elephant in the room you think Duchesne is going to be, and how short of a leash do you think he'll be on with the coaching staff?
Hey, that's a great question. Thanks, Bob. We'll talk about it. I mean,
that is a great question.
It's a great question. And I think, you know, part of that is, where's he going to play to start? I mean, I think a lot of people want to see him reunited with Johansson and Forsberg. And look, I think it makes sense. That's probably the route I would go if I'm John Hines to start with, and just see if you can find something there with that line being together. Now, in saying that, and that goes back to the Granlin discussion, that also takes a spot away from Tolvanen. I think Tolvanen could benefit very much from playing with Forsberg and Johansson every night. That takes a spot away from Tomasino, moving him down in the lineup. Like, there's a trickle-down effect now with all this stuff. I don't know that we're going to get to the point where Matt Duchesne is a healthy scratch every night, because his contract is what it is. He's still a good player. Like, this idea that he just can't play hockey, I don't buy. He is a good player. He has been nowhere near worth the money that they're paying him.
Yeah.
And you have to separate the two things.
That's a great point. And it kind of goes along with, like, the Ellis discussion a little bit. Living up to the deal as great as you hoped at this point, maybe not. And certainly, like, in the postseason, in some moments, disappointing, but awfully good. And I'm not saying Duchesne is exactly relative to Ellis as a forward to a defenseman. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is he's still good. He's just not $8 million good. He hasn't been here at all.
No.
But he can do stuff for your team. But
he's one of your 12 best forwards. I can promise you that.
But it is an interesting question, because we know what has gone on so far with Hines and Duchesne.
Exactly.
In terms of, Hines has had no reservations or hesitation, it seems, to in sitting him down, moving him around, taking him off the power play, whatever it is. So it's just so interesting, because I don't get the sense that Hines is a coach who has any regard, I don't know how many coaches do, for, well, the contract says this, so my lineup has to say this. I don't get the sense that Poyle's type of GM who would lean on a coach and say, this guy makes a lot of money, but it still is it's a reality. It's an unspoken reality of the situation.
Well, I agree with you. I don't get that sense either. But I think the contract is now important, because you're not going to lose him now. I mean, the expansion draft's gone. Like, if you're John Hines, your tenure here in Nashville now moving forward is largely going to be defined by, can you find a way to get Johansson or Duchesne to work? Because if you can't, you're probably not going to be here. Like, because if Johansson and Duchesne don't end up working out, unless a trade comes out of nowhere that I just can't at the moment foresee happening. And look, I think it's more possible today than I thought it was a week ago, because we've seen some crazy stuff happening in the NHL the last week or so. But I just don't see that happening. So I've said this a few times. They are stuck with Johansson and Duchesne. Like, if John Hines can't find a way to make that work or try to maximize that to the best of his ability, this team's just not going to be very good. And if the team's not very good, he's not going to be here. So this is a very important stretch now for, I think, both Matt Duchesne and John Hines. I think it's pretty clear. I don't think I'm going out on a limb here. I don't know if they're each other's biggest fans at the moment. Like, I think Matt Duchesne probably feels like he's not being utilized here the way he wants to be. And I think John Hines probably feels like, hey, give me a reason to utilize you, and I will. And I'm not seeing that reason yet. I don't know that they're on the best of terms. And again, I think people overblow that way too much. It's not that big of a deal all the time. But to me, like, if you're John Hines, your primary job now, aside from, you know, bringing up these young players and getting them ready and seeing what you have, you got to find a way to make it work with Duchesne and Johansson. Because if you don't, they're still going to be here. You may not at the end of that.
No, that's a great point. And I think you can go to the lineup well a certain amount of times. But, yeah, I mean, at some point it's like you're gonna scratch that guy for years, you know, because you're not moving the deal. You're not buying that out, given everything else that's gone on, including other buyouts. We haven't gotten into cap recapture land. I mean, my gosh. So that's a good point. I think the young players who came in eventually last year and helped turn the season around were very useful in, you know, sort of demonstrating, helping Hines kind of show what he's looking for from everyone. Honestly, I think Duchesne responded well, too. I have not much, since Duchesne has been here, thought, gosh, he's really dogging it. Now, I think clearly as a centerman, you know, maybe in the defensive zone.
He's got some issues defensively.
Yeah, he makes some mistakes, and maybe there's just like some just a play where it's like, you got to be there, you got to block that shot or whatever. But, like, I don't think it's one of these things where he's, to my naked eye, like dogging it. No. Or just like, and I think he'll respond to all this the way you would hope, because I think he has pride and wants to prove that he's a good player. But, yeah, they've got to find a common ground, and I think you're right that John Hines, if those two don't turn around to some extent, and, you know, obviously the bottom line is what ultimately matters, but how much does the bottom line really shift positively if they don't? And so then at some point, it will probably come back to Hines. I'm going to again say every time that comes up, you know, the idea that Poile would fire Hines and hire another coach is
I'm with you.
Wild to me.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% with you on that front. Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Amy texting in, why is the talk always about Duchesne? I think Johansson is worse because he's had more years to prove himself as a Pred.
Because I disagree.
Well, I hear that. And look, I don't want to let Johansson off the hook because he's not been good in the regular season. That's got to be better. And I realize it's not all about point production, but that's why he's paid the money he's paid, is to put up points. And that's got to be better. I also think we have seen Ryan Johansson in a Nashville Predators uniform play extremely well and be worth every dime of the money that they paid him. You know, the first couple of years, this is why the dogging it after he got paid argument never really works with me for Ryan Johansson, because the first couple of years after he got paid, he was excellent for this team. In the playoffs, every year, with the exception of one in Dallas, he is excellent for this team. So they're the same in terms of they've got to be better, both of them. But I think the conversation is slightly different. With Johansson, it kind of feels like there's something that's still there. And Duchesne, it doesn't feel that way. And I'm not saying that it can't change around with Duchesne. They just have two different feels to them to me, even though largely I think it is fair to lump them into the same category. They both got to be better.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Johansson has just done a lot more here. I will forever believe that was a good trade. It got them really close to winning a cup, and then he backed it up and backed up again. Like you said, every postseason series but that one, he's been at least good and sometimes much more than that, and he just does more for you, too, than Duchesne does. So it's both of them, they are lumped together. I would definitely say right now, up to here, there's a pretty big difference in track record, and there's a lot longer for Johansson to be here and demonstrate that, but we just haven't seen much from Duchesne. Not much of what he was supposed to bring offensively.
Rob on YouTube, I'm amazed the team is still clogged up at middle at center despite all the movement over the past 2 years. It is amazing. Like, you've lost Kyle Turris. You've lost Nick Bonino. Bring back Granlund. You still got a whole lot of people that can play center. You've lost Yarncroke. There's still a lot of people that can play center on this team. I think, look, in some ways, it's a good problem to have. In some ways, it does create a little bit of a logjam there.
I'm old enough to remember being here 5 years ago. Number two center was Mike Ribeiro.
Yes. Absolutely.
Right? I mean, I guess not. I guess
started
with
off
Mike
yeah.
Fisher the number two center, and then
there was before that Mike Ribeiro was the number one center before Johansson.
Yeah,
got
I'm
here.
Not old enough to remember that.
Yeah,
yikes.
Oh, they've had some doozies of number one centers along the way. It's been that's been a position that's been difficult to figure out, which is I think part of what makes the Duchesne and Johansson conversation so frustrating.
Jeremy K. Gover on Twitter with a good point. You know what fixes both players? In quotes, fixes a power play that threatens to score.
Well, they got to be on the power play.
And they need to do good things on the power play.
Well, they got to be on it, and yeah, I think they will be. But you've got to find a way to score.
I'm guessing they will be.
I'm guessing they will be.
Hey, it worked out on that particular night.
It did. That's for sure. When we come back, we will get into the story of the day nationally in sports, and that is Aaron Rodgers just totally eviscerating the Green Bay Packers yesterday in one of the greatest press conferences that I've ever seen. We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, as you know, one of the things that you really look forward to and are waiting for in the job of sports journalism as a writer, as a radio host, whatever the case is, just an honest athlete, like an honest and open and real athlete. And no holding back in a press conference. The truth is all out there in the open. Very rarely does that happen, as we know. I mean, players don't want to say a whole lot publicly, and there's a benefit to keeping things close to the vest most of the time. But every now and then, you get those moments, those interviews, and those press conferences that nothing is held back. And we got one of those yesterday. Aaron Rodgers, totally unfiltered yesterday, addressing the media for the first time since the NFL draft, where the rumors came out that he was done playing in Green Bay. He wanted to be traded. We all know about the offseason drama that took place with Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. He's now back in Packers training camp. He was on the field yesterday. And after his practice session, he let loose on the Green Bay Packers. He said a lot. He talked for 33 minutes yesterday, and he got asked the first question, I think, by Tom Pelissero of the NFL Network, you know, asking kind of exactly how they got to this point and what all went into this offseason for Aaron Rodgers. I think he talked for about 7 minutes straight on that answer, and it was amazing to watch. It was one of the greatest press conferences I've ever seen. Totally honest, totally out in the open. Everything was thrown out there on the table, where he stands, where the Green Bay Packers stand, and what his future could look like moving forward. And basically what it boiled down to, and Matt Schneidman of The Athletic has come out with a really good piece at theathletic.com, kind of highlighting exactly what the issues were. Aaron Rodgers, not a big fan of the way that some outgoing veterans were treated, whether that was with their contracts, whether it was just the way they were treated by the organization. There was not a commitment to him beyond 2021. And according to Rodgers, that dates back to even February of this year. No willingness to commit to him beyond 2021, even though he just had an MVP season and literally one of the greatest seasons that we've ever seen out of a quarterback. And then there's the stuff that's rumored to be out there. He confirmed that we've talked about with Charles Robinson, that Adam Schefter brought up a few times as well. He's not part of free agent discussions, not a part of, you know, some big decisions that the Packers make. He feels like he should be. Other quarterbacks around the league are afforded that opportunity. And is not a big fan of how the Packers handled contract discussions with him and with other players as well. So it was basically Festivus come early yesterday for Aaron Rodgers. An airing of the grievances. And, Joe, I watched the whole thing through twice. It was something to behold yesterday.
Slow-mo.
Yeah. I analyzed every angle of this.
You played it backwards.
It was amazing.
See if there's any hidden messages in there for Cheesehead Nation.
Yes.
Amazing stuff. No. He gently savaged Gutekunst.
Yes.
I mean, basically, you come away from that like, wow.
Yeah. It was a lot.
How do you disrespect someone this important to your livelihood?
And we've talked about this a lot, and I've tried to tell people, like, this has been coming for a long time. Like, this is not something that's just happened. And I think we saw a little bit more in detail why that's the case yesterday. And here's a little bit of sound yesterday from Aaron Rodgers in his press conference addressing some of the issues that he's had with the Green Bay Packers. Here's what Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers.
The other part in February was wanting to be a part of conversations involving free agents, which has never happened in my career. You know, I've trained with a number of NFL guys most of my career in the off seasons. My agency at the first has had a number of high draft picks over the years. I've tried to pass along information, hasn't really been used, shall we say. So I wanted to offer my services as a recruiter, you know, and I think we can all understand, you know, Green Bay isn't, a huge vacation destination. People are coming here to play with me, to play with our team, and knowing that they can win a championship here. And the fact that I haven't been used in those discussions was one I wanted to change moving forward. And I felt like based on my years, the way I can still play, that should be a natural part of the conversation. As that progressed from that point, nothing really changed on that front. So we got into March, and the conversation changed. As I felt like, if you can't commit to me past 2021, and I'm not a part of recruiting process and for agency, if I'm not a part of the future, then instead of letting me be a lame duck quarterback, if you want to make a change and move forward, then go ahead and do it. That obviously didn't happen. Like I said, it wasn't a draft day thing. There were conversations for a number of months leading up to that. Post the draft, I think what basically happened was then they said, we'll give you some money now. Let's see if we can throw some money at you. I said from the start it wasn't about the money. Obviously, I didn't show up for the off-season program or mini camp. To me, it was bigger than this. It was about trying to be a resource for the organization that I care about and love so much.
And Aaron Rodgers, I mean, that was just part of what he went on for a long time. And he went on to talk about equating it to, like, the job of a journalist. You've wrote some really good stories. You feel like you deserve a raise. And your boss says, yeah, no, we'll just kind of see what happens on that front. And then you get another job offer, and all of a sudden your bosses love you, and they want to throw money. That's how Rodgers felt when the reported contract extension that Green Bay offered was put on the table. It was a complete evisceration of the Green Bay Packers yesterday by Aaron Rodgers.
Little bit of arrogance, of Aaron Rodgers' yes. arrogance that trickled in there.
And I knew that would happen, but yes.
And some good, you know, tough questions of him too. But I thought he handled them well. And I mean, I think a lot of this is he wants to, like, if Tom Brady can go to a new place and they're like, who should we get, Tom? Who can we get for you, buddy?
Yeah.
And they go win a Super Bowl, by the way. Then why would you not, as someone who, I mean, how many people in that building have been there longer than him at this point?
Not many. He's been there 17 years.
Why would you? Like, I understand if you're a GM and you're like, look, man, you're not my assistant GM. You might be the assistant to the GM, but you're not the assistant GM. You're not wanting to indulge that.
Sure.
And all. I get that to a point, but it sounds like he just completely blew him off, which is dumb.
Right, and Rodgers acknowledged yesterday, like, I don't even necessarily want to be a part of final decision-making. I just want to have a process.
Have, like, some input.
And, you know, a big part of this, and we knew this last year. Last year in training camp, the Packers cut Jake Kumerow, which Jake Kumerow is not a very good wide receiver, but played pretty well with Aaron Rodgers because it's Aaron Rodgers. And they just cut him, didn't ask Aaron Rodgers about it at all. And he brought that up yesterday, like, maybe run something like that by me and see what my thoughts are on it, and maybe I could change your mind on something like that.
Well, and he talked about them being disrespect on the way out, too. So,
exactly.
Again, this is – he could have been – I mean, he didn't cross the line, but he said enough that you can let your imagination run. And some of the conversations he's had with teammates, current teammates and former teammates, about how Gutekunst goes about his job.
Right. And maybe the most amazing part is, like, he made it sound like nothing's really changed on that front. Like, everything that's happened this offseason, obviously, I think they realize at some point they've screwed up and that Aaron Rodgers is probably not going to be here next year in Green Bay. But it doesn't feel like much has changed on that regard. Now, they did go out yesterday and it was made official and they traded for Randall Cobb. And Randall Cobb came in from Houston from a 6th-round pick. Obviously, that is somebody Aaron Rodgers loves. He wanted Randall Cobb back in there. And Gutekunst is talking right now to the media, and somebody asked him, quote, is Randall Cobb here to just make Aaron Rodgers happy? And Gutekunst's response was, quote, I think that's a big part of it. So basically saying, yeah, we don't really have much interest in Randall Cobb, but Aaron does, so we're going to bring him in here.
Wow.
Which got to make you feel great for Randall Cobb.
Yeah, so now Gutekunst is like, I guess now we can just say, well, you can't hold me responsible for any of my moves.
Exactly.
Just making Aaron happy. Oh, this is great. This is going to be awesome.
Gutekunst, quote, I very much believe in the way that when we release players, we do it with class and integrity. I mean, this is
– oh, yes.
It's very apparent those two despise each other. And, of course, obviously, if you're Gutekunst, you can't ever say that because he's your Hall of Fame quarterback. He's one of the best players ever. Aaron Rodgers yesterday – with the look on his face, basically said all you needed to know about Gutekunst. But he was asked point blank, did he ever want Gutekunst to be fired, and what's his relationship? And he said, no, he never asked for him to be fired, and I would describe our relationship as professional at this point, was his exact response, which was amazing yesterday. This is going to be something, which, by the way, Gutekunst talked yesterday and is now talking again today as a general manager. And that's only because Aaron Rodgers went off yesterday.
All right. Some daily GM pressers.
It's good
times for Gutekunst.
It's going to be pretty amazing. Now, look, Davante Adams is a big part of this, too. He went off on the Packers yesterday about how he should be the highest paid wide receiver in the league, and that's not really been something that the Packers have even approached with him, which is, again, amazing to me. He is the best wide receiver in football right now. And don't believe me. Go back to Jeremy Fowler's poll. It's not really all that close. It's Davante Adams. He's number one in the league right now. So to summarize it all, like, this feels like it's it. Like, this feels like, and you saw Rodgers and Davante Adams put up the last dance photo on Instagram. Like, it kind of feels like this is going to be their last run together with the Packers. Packers got a really good team. I mean, Dennis Kelly was added to it yesterday. They've got a great offensive line. Now with Cobb coming in, I mean, they've got a pretty deep wide receiver room. They've got a really good team. This is their chance to win a Super Bowl. But it kind of feels like this is going to be a Super Bowl or bust year in Green Bay. And then after that, Rodgers, Davante Adams, probably going their separate ways.
Yep. So does this mean, as a Packers fan, that, like, obviously you'd like it to – you would like for all this to have gone a different way. But,
yes.
Like, do you have more excitement for this season because
yes.
of – yeah? Okay.
Yes.
It's not like – there's no bittersweetness to it.
No. Not yet. There will be. But no, right now it's just pure excitement.
Yeah, maybe maybe this whole thing actually serves to be some kind of a bump and they can get past the Bucs.
Well, I will say this, like, a spurned Aaron Rodgers typically plays pretty well, and he's pretty fired up. So I'm excited about that part. I think it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, this is going to be a talking point all year long. They're going to ask him about his future all the time. Every time the Packers make a move in free agency or they cut somebody in training camp, like, you talk about Aaron? You talk to this about Aaron? I mean, it's going to happen all the time. It's going to be amazing to watch.
It's going to be fantastic. And I'm glad you're excited, but we still don't know how Aaron Rodgers is going to react when Dan Campbell glares at him from the other sideline. I mean, that could be the beginning of the end right there.
Well, it could be his birth as maybe the quarterback of the Detroit Lions next year. Maybe that's he looks at Dan Campbell and says, you know what? I want to be a part of that.
Wow. I hadn't even thought about that.
Could
total
he go,
shift of power in the
could
NFL.
Could he go to the Bears or the Vikings or the Lions just in pure spite? I think it's on the table.
Well, yeah,
he's got to be
traded. Except he's smart enough to not go to the Lions.
Yeah,
but yes,
I would think so. We'll see what happens on that front. When we come back, an incredible night last night in college football, including some action between the Big 12 and ESPN that could potentially turn legal. We'll get to that coming up here in a second. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Blue Raider Blitz is rolling across the mid-state to a town near you. Led by Middle Tennessee Blue Raiders football head coach Rick Stockstill, this community-wide event will be guaranteed fun for the whole family. Each of the stops will include food, ticket giveaways, and a chance to mix and mingle with MTSU coaching staffs and Lightning as well. Later today, the tour will stop at Puckett's in Murfreesboro from 6 to 8 p.m. For more information, head to globalblueraiders.com/tour. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Joe, a crazy story last night in the world of college football. We've talked about the Big 12, Texas and Oklahoma leaving to join the SEC. Last night, a cease and desist letter sent to ESPN. It was sent before last night, but that's when it was uncovered by the Big 12 and signed by Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby, basically accusing ESPN of encouraging other conferences to pick apart the league so Texas and Oklahoma can move to the SEC quicker and have avoid paying a massive buyout on that front. That's the alleged threats and conversation coming from ESPN thrown out there by the Big 12. And the quote that Bob Bowlesby told the Associated Press is, quote, "I have absolute certainty that they," meaning ESPN, "have been involved in manipulating other conferences to go after our members." This is pretty incredible what the Big 12 and Bob Bowlesby are throwing out there, levying these accusations against ESPN.
So I need to get better at not using, like, violence and death analogies in sports, which was way more common before.
Yes.
But I did use that analogy with, like, Greg Sankey, what he did to Bob Bowlesby. Right?
Yes.
Well, Bob Bowlesby is now a zombie on an absolute rampage
against ESPN.
My gosh, this is just amazing stuff. I mean, really, let's all just get the popcorn out. So this is clearly the AAC. And the funny thing is, we had The Athletic, but everybody has been writing about these things. Anybody who covers college football on a national basis has been talking about AAC or Big 12, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the AAC sources told us, and I think it was Nicole's, like, we've already got ESPN at the table. Like, they've kind of been, you know, confirming this. And now Bowlesby's like, okay, well, you know, tortious interference. And I don't know where it's going to go, but absolute certainty is also a quote that he gave our Max Olson at The Athletic
yep.
for a piece on this. And obviously the whole point here is if you're ESPN and the Big 12 can dissolve, you just saved yourself hundreds of millions of dollars. And, of course, Oklahoma and Texas also save collectively, well, I guess, what, about $160 million if it just goes away and there's no more buyout to get out of the Big 12 and everybody can just move on. There's a lot of incentive for that, and I don't blame him. Don't blame him at all if he's trying to keep that league together for being furious. I mean, every single school in the Irate 8, if that's what we're going to call them, has a ton at stake here.
Sure.
So I'm going to read this quote from Bowlesby to our Max Olson at The Athletic, okay? Quote, I understand the pressure the broadcasters are under. They have huge rights fees. They have a cable architecture that is crumbling. It's gone down 3, 4, 5% a year, and it's going to continue until it gets way lower than what it is today. What has been a very lucrative financial model is now declining rapidly. So I understand why they're trying to get out of rights fees and trying to look for economies and maybe even why they might be articulating moves like OU in Texas to the SEC. Aside here, real quick, unquote, aside. That's not the lawsuit. The lawsuit is post OU in Texas, but he got that in. Okay, back to quote Bob Bowlesby. Quote, but there are certain things you can do that are right, and there are certain things you can't do that are wrong. This is across the line. They've been accused of it previously and bristled, but I can tell you, I wouldn't be saying these things if I wasn't absolutely certain. So, yeah.
It's a popular phrase he's throwing around.
Yes, he is. So, feels confident enough to, one, go with a lawsuit, two, talk to, go make the media rounds and make some really strong statements about this. And what does it mean? What is it? Where does it all lead? I don't know. But I think it tells me, one, that the Big 12 is not going, you know, softly into the night. And again, those schools, they have a lot at stake to maintain this financial arrangement. And yeah, sure, if they're out floating like West Virginia. So that's one thing, too. You know, we're talking about AAC. I do wonder if the West Virginia ACC thing is at least also sort of part of this. And ESPN has incentive there too, by the way.
Yep.
With the ACC. But, I mean, they stand to lose a ton. So this gap that already we've talked about with Texas, Oklahoma, you go to the SEC. Now the SEC eventually just has, you know, the bigger number per school per year by far than everybody. But then that's also relative, like the Big 12 schools, relative to what they make now. Now think about the future. And if they lose all this money that they would have at least had from Texas and Oklahoma, which they should. They should have to pay out the nose to do this. I mean, that's right. That's what's right, you know. And ESPN, I mean, should if they actually did this, I don't know how it will go, but it seems like they got a case.
It does. Now, ESPN has responded to this in a statement saying, quote, the claims in the letter have no merit, talking about the Big 12's cease and desist letter that was sent that way. I'm fascinated to see how this is going to play out. I don't think it takes too many connecting of the dots to see that ESPN might have had some conversations involved with this, and we'll see what happens on that front. But I wonder, like, if we get through the end of this process – and there's lawsuits filed and all these different things happen, and ESPN is found to be complacent in this, what does that mean for ESPN? How much money could you be on the hook for at that point? Would be, I think that's a really interesting question to think about as they move forward here.
Yeah, and Bowlesby's dead on about Yeah, obviously, cable subscribing. I mean, we know where that's going. Cord cutting, all that. I mean, it's, it's just a different model moving forward. But still having, I mean, having the rights to the games, however people digest it, is still incredibly valuable. So, yeah, I don't know. Some have ripped Bowlesby again, and it's been a bad month for Bob Bowlesby, okay?
Yeah,
it's been a bad run here for Bob Bowlesby, who, by the way, is the same guy who said, well, we couldn't possibly have January football outside.
Yes.
So there's some maybe common links here. But, you know, the idea of, you know, Bob, you're going to – whatever you look like in the future – you're going to need to negotiate with ESPN, right? So how's that going to go now? But obviously, he feels like – I mean, look, he obviously looks at this not just that he feels that he has evidence, but that, look, I mean, they are trying to rip this apart so that they can get out of all this money that we should be getting.
Right.
So, I mean, I think you can understand his position on this.
When we come back, we'll be joined by Jason Kersey from The Athletic, who covers the Oklahoma Sooners. We'll get more into this with him. Also talk about the move for Texas and Oklahoma to the SEC. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game.